Hello, I'm Joel Hughes.
And I'm Aurora Alexander.
And this is the Psychology Pathways Podcast.
We help busy psychology students succeed.
If you want to contact us, send an email to psychologypathwayspodcast, all one word, at gmail.com.
On this episode of the podcast, we'll hear from Sharla on the value of informational interviews. We'll also speak with Michaela on the value of specific credentials, in this case, the Addiction Certificate Program. We'll also listen today to dispel the myth that you can't get a job with a bachelor's degree in psychology.
Well, we're already on the second podcast of 2020. This is the second half of season one. Can you believe it, Aurora?
Can't believe it.
In 2019, between the beginning of the school year and the end of the semester, we had 6 regular and 6 bonus episodes. And we originally, our goal was to have maybe 200 listens, I think.
Yeah. I put my expectations low.
Well, we had over 1,400 total listens during the fall semester.
Woohoo!
And I had no anticipation that we were going to make 6 bonus episodes.
Yeah. We thought we'd be one and doneers, you know?
Yeah. I guess we just are... responding to the moment, whenever there's something that comes up, we'll throw it out there hot off the press, different opportunities and things
exactly.
like that.
Exactly. Yeah.
So anyway, as we start the second half of season one in 2020, last episode, we had interviews with students, part one. And we have 3 interviews this time. And so I don't really think we even need to talk about it. Let's just get right into it and hear from Sharla.
Yeah. All right. Today we are here. We're joined by Sharla. We're not going to say your last name because we don't want to blow your cover because you're a college student. So, but I'm so thankful that you were able to come in and talk with us today. And you're going to be talking about one of my most favorite subjects ever.
Yes.
Informational interviews. And
yes.
So I guess I just want to pick your brain a little bit. So tell us a little bit about your experience with informational interviews. When did you first hear about them? How many have you done? Who have you talked to?
Okay, so the first time I heard about them was from you, obviously. I'd never really thought of the concept, really. I mean, obviously there's interviews, but I never thought of just using them to pick people's brains, but the first one I actually did was with one of your friends from the Rehab Center.
Mm-hmm.
And we met at Starbucks, super chill. And it was kind of just... She kind of just word vomited everything. She just gave me everything that she could even... Just a lot of information.
That's the great thing about informational interviews.
Yeah.
It's very unfiltered.
Oh, yeah. And I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Because I think in some of these professional settings, they kind of, they don't give you the nitty gritty stuff, which is what, I personally romanticize things. Like I've told you before, I don't think of, realistic things at times. We just get in our head, think best case scenario, dream world, But when people are up front, I hated it. At first, and now I love it. Or I started out in this career field, and now I'm here. It's comforting to kind of hear where people come from and how they get to where they are, and there's no set way of how they got there, which is comforting but not comforting at the same time.
But you can actually see that there's not just they didn't start out as a fetus knowing that they wanted to be a counselor, or they knew that they so
mm-hmm.
there was a little bit of a bumbly kind of track, and you get to hear that from them.
Yes.
And I love in informational interviews they tell you the goods, bads, and uglies.
Yeah.
So list off some of the occupations that you actually talk to.
Okay, so I've talked to a clinical counselor within a nonprofit. I've talked to, I'm not sure of some of the rehab women's titles directly, but 2 different women from rehab.
Okay.
And then I've talked to children's services through Summit County, the Akron Juvenile Courts, different people within that, advocates, guardian ad litems, whatever. But that's mainly what I've been looking at because that's what I'm trying to get into. Yeah,
okay.
So those are the informational interviews I've personally had.
Great. So what do you think that you can maybe attribute to maybe something that you've learned about who you are as a professional through these informational interviews that you didn't necessarily learn in a classroom setting?
So actually one of my informational interviews led to my internship.
Oh, coincidentally. No kidding, really?
Yeah. So I met with Stephen Craig, who is a part of Resident Services, and he basically gave me contact to his wife, who works at Child Guidance and Family Solutions in Akron. And I just talked with her, picked her brain, you know, because I didn't really know what all happened within the nonprofit realm of things. And once I talked to her, she gave me the contact to the director of the program and had an interview. And then that's when I kind of got to see the nonprofit side of things, which I didn't realize the politics kind of. And
that also illustrates, though, the friend of a friend of a friend
yes.
to networking.
Yeah.
Where sometimes the first person you talk to doesn't offer you a job or an Mm-mm. internship, but they know someone.
Yes.
And that's really valuable. And obviously, you're talking about specific agencies around here, but this would be true for anywhere.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, you're not a spokesperson for anybody, but wherever you are in the country or internationally, there's mm-hmm. going to be similar kinds of agencies that have people that will tell you how it really is if you can set up an informational interview.
Yes, for sure. Yeah. And I didn't even realize that all of that was going to come from just that one conversation, you know. So through that internship, it was hard, you know. Some of the stuff, we worked hands-on with children with early psychosis and crazy stuff, you know. And I got to see some of the different group therapies, and it just opened my eyes to what these clinicians go through on a day-to-day and kind of some of the heavy workloads that some of these counselors have, 80, 100 caseloads. And I was like, oh, do I want to do this for the rest of my life? Like,
yeah,
work
really
in a nonprofit?
Things in a perspective.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. And then picking some of their brains and hearing where they, even though they're working there now, where they're trying to go, you know?
Yeah.
And then, so then I would tell them, I'm like, that doesn't really make me feel good, you know? Because then I'm like, am I ever going to be like content within a career? But I don't think that's a bad thing. You know, they have goals and aspirations that they're continually trying to get to. So it made me feel good that I won't ever really have my mind made up no matter what career I'm in. Like, people are constantly searching for goals. So it kind of makes me feel good.
Great.
You know?
Awesome. So how long have you been doing informational interviews? Like, when did you start? Like a year or two ago?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And we already know that you've already made these connections, but mm-hmm. so from these informational interviews, do you think that you've maybe more solidified what you want to do moving forward, like past graduation?
Mm-hmm, for sure. Yeah.
Like, where do you see yourself going?
So through the informational interviews, I've kind of found out the tracks that people have taken to get to where I'm trying to go. So it's given me sort of guidance on how to get there. So that's when I realized for sure to go into my master's program, and then through my internship, talking with my supervisor to eventually get my supervisor license within, you know, years down the line, you know, it kind of started setting up those tentative goals that I'm trying to reach for, you know, through these next couple of years. But yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. And so let me just ask you, what steps did you go through in order to even conduct an informational interview? Because I know when I kind of laid it on your lap and go, this is a thing, you can do this now. What did you do in order to just make your first steps towards doing that?
So I remember you telling me in one of our meetings, you were like, you have to infect them, you know, you have
yeah.
to infect them.
Yeah, that's right. I said it.
Yes,
give them
did.
The Charla bug.
Yes, give them a bug. So I mean, I'm not normally nervous to approach people, but I understand that some people are, and that's totally okay. But I think at the end of the day, I mean, people want to talk about themselves, you know, and people want to share how they've got there. It's, you know, it's like their story. It's their come up for the most part. So I started calling people, just looking up numbers, and just, I mean, you kind of sound dumb a little bit, you know, because I'm Charla, can I talk to just someone that could maybe I can learn something from? But emailing, calling people, and then they'll always give you some sort of contact or some person to talk to, because
right.
people want to talk about
I mean
themselves.
So it was a little bit intimidating.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, especially higher up positions that I was wanting to contact with, I was like, oh, am I allowed to, you know? I'm just an undergrad, why do they want to talk to me, you know?
Although I'll point out that that's actually like a puppy. It's like to say I'm a currently enrolled undergraduate student.
Yeah.
Suddenly that evokes everyone's sense of, oh, I want to help this person. You know, if only they can know what I didn't know. And
yeah.
so to be honest, that's a great way to get your foot in the door.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, I mean, it's, I can say that all I was met with each informational interview is that, you know, they're always so open, so comforting and welcoming to giving you information and, I don't know, affirming, you know, some of your thoughts and, you know, thought processes. So it does make you feel better, too.
And I think that informational interviews are not threatening to them because mm-hmm. it's not a job interview and you're not asking for a job.
No. Yeah, yeah. And they're, and again, they're just so blatantly honest. I had one on the phone with another woman from Rahab, and she was so, so honest the entire time, which I appreciated because I didn't know, you know, I do want to work with, you know, trauma victims, you know, and again, not that I romanticize that, but I'm, you know, want to help everyone. And you make it this, you know, happy, like everyone's going to accept me because I want to help them sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And she was like, no. They're not going to. They're going to be mean. They're going to lash out because they are hurt, you know? Right. So it kind of, and I told her, she was like, if you're tone sensitive, you know, it's not really, really going to work. And I was like, well, I'll work on that. I'll try and build that up. But it makes you realize those things. Whereas in my classrooms, in my lectures, you know, they're not saying that. We're learning about Freud and, you know, all these other things, mm-hmm. not about people sometimes not being receptive to your help, you know, which exactly. is kind of mm-hmm. groundbreaking.
And how that can affect you.
Yeah.
When you
yeah.
take that home.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I'm so happy that you're getting this kind of experience. For the Sharla that I met with 2 years ago.
Yeah.
What would you tell that Sharla that you're getting ready to do an informational interview or you're thinking about it? What would you tell the younger you or a student that's listening now that are thinking like, I didn't even know informational interview? What kind of advice would you give that student?
First, I would say just do it. Don't, you know, fiddle around with it. Just kind of take that jump because I think I was apprehensive with it for a couple of weeks. I remember because I just, you know, I was like, I don't know how they're going to feel about me or if they're going to even want to talk to me. Just do it. And even if you fumble, it's okay. You know, there are people, we're all people, we're undergrads and typically, you know, they're older. They understand where we're coming from. I don't know. Just think of it not really as an interview or an interview per se, almost yeah. like a coffee date or it's very casual, I feel. So don't put too much pressure on the idea of it. Cause I feel like informational interview sometimes sounds, cause it still has interview in it.
And the word interview.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. But it's more info part.
Yeah, yeah. We need a new word.
Yeah.
A new term.
Yeah.
But I remember doing my first informational interview and I went in and I had my resume and I had my,
yeah.
I had all my stuff. And I remember my supervisor at the time was like, Aurora, this is not a job interview. This person's yeah. not going to look at you and go, can you start on Monday?
Yeah.
And I was a little deflated in the moment because I thought somebody would just naturally love my charm and hire yeah. me on the spot.
Yeah.
But I guess that person really put things into perspective for me because I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. This isn't a job interview. This is an informational interview. So I'm not trying to get a job. I'm trying to, you know, glean some information from this professional that's been working in the field for years.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that you've been able to move past the intimidation factor and push forward and you see how useful of a tool it is.
Yeah. Yeah. And in general, I think it just helps you with, I mean, just me looking at master's programs and talking to some of the people within the programs I'm looking at, it kind of encourages you in general when just talking to people to pick their brain more and feel more comfortable in that, where I wasn't normally, you know, the one to ask a million thousand questions because I was like, I don't want to be annoying or, you know, whatever. But I don't know. It gives you confidence. Once you start practicing that, you feel more comfortable with asking questions and picking people's brains and not knowing.
Right.
You know?
And I know that after like introducing this to you for informational interviews and you had a few under your belt when we were talking about graduate school, I said, okay. So anyways, I know that when I introduced that to you, informational interviews, then I started telling you, okay, now you're thinking about master's programs. Why don't you reach out to the program coordinators?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And how was that experience for you? Now that you were coming from informational interviews, did you feel comfortable reaching out to program coordinators now?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I call people all the time. I'm like, who am I supposed to be talking to? And typically it's students you'll get a hold of first, especially since I work in res services. You know, I know it's a student and they're like, I don't know how to help you right now. Let me forward you, you know. But it's definitely made me more comfortable with reaching out and asking, you know, the questions that I need to know.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Very good. All right. Well, thank you so much, Sharla. I really appreciate you stopping yeah. by and talking with us. I really think that your stories are going to be able to help a lot of students that are kind of like, what is this thing? I didn't know that this was, yeah. So I'm just very thankful and I'm glad that you're putting them to good use.
Thank you so much.
Okay, so today we are joined by Michaela. She is currently in involved in the Addictions Counseling Certificate Program. And I met with her for advising a few weeks ago, and I just wanted to have her come in and talk to us a little bit about actually being in the program, because we had Dr. Osborne in a little while ago, and she was telling us all about it. But I wanted to have a student that was actually currently involved and get your perspective. So thank you so much, Michaela, for swinging by to talk to us. So tell us a little bit about your experience in the program.
So initially I started the program to get a little bit more experience to make sure that's what I wanted to do. With life is be a counselor and get my foot in the door with some things, but it actually has turned out to be so much more than just like that program. It's turned into the experience. I have learned so many micro skills with just dealing with people and dealing with so many things just in life and not just about counseling. Having the experience in the program is something very different than just going to class and getting that, just getting that classroom feel. Is you're still getting that, but you're also getting so much more of an experience than just that classroom. It's so much more than that. So the experience has been nothing less of positive and amazing, and I honestly am so excited to finish it and keep going with it. But yeah, so, I mean, it's pretty positive and amazing.
So how far into it are you?
So I started in August, and the first semester you'll take two classes. So the first 7 weeks and the second 7 weeks are broken up into two classes. And then the same for the spring semester, first 7 weeks, second 7 weeks. And then in the summer, you'll have your practicum, which is roughly 31 hours a week, I believe, and you get placed in an agency, so you're actually practicing under a supervisor and doing the work that you're learning about in the classroom. So right now, I'm almost halfway through. I'll be officially done in the summer with the program.
And it sounds like it could be different in different parts of the country, but one of the things that you're emphasizing is that these kind of certificate programs aren't just lectures and tests. This is more experiential, and it sounds like there's a big experiential component in terms of going out onto a placement. And so you're learning different kinds of things.
Yes, 100%. I have learned so many people skills just being in the class. I'm not sitting through a lecture. Some of it is lectures. There has to be lectures. He has to tell us what we're learning. But other than that, I've like having the micro skills, learning how to deal with people, how to cope with people, how to approach people even differently, even in a professional setting, has completely changed the person I am in just like the short amount of time. So,
and you said professional things, and so I'm wondering, what do you learn about being a professional that you might be able to take into a career that you don't learn in a typical classroom?
So I would definitely say like those micro skills I keep repeating, knowing how to approach people, deal with problems that could arise, any confrontational problems you learn how to deal with, because that's the skills that you're learning to be a counselor. You're learning to deal with those people that do have the underlying problem, disease, abuse, like substance abuse, anything like that. So you are learning just those skills. And I found myself actually practicing in like the work setting with a manager or assistant manager, coworkers, anything. If they have any underlying issues or anything, I've been able to present myself in a way that I wouldn't have been able to do before the program.
And it sounds like you started this just to test it out, almost prototype or try it on. But this turned out to be the right fit for you.
Yes, 100%. I tried it out, honestly, just to explore my waters, try to take it for like electives, get towards graduation, have my foot in the door for grad school. It would look good on a resume, which was the initial thought. But it turned into so much more than just having that good look on a resume for graduate school.
And if you had not liked it and it wasn't your cup of tea, that's fine. It would have been elective credits. It would have been on your resume. So this is a win-win, because in your case, it turned out to be something you can really take moving forward.
Yes, for sure.
What steps did you go through in order to get into the program? So was this process intimidating? Did you have to go through a bunch of hoops? Like, what are we talking about here?
So to begin, I actually heard of it from word of mouth from another student. She told me she was a psych major and told me she was in their program. So I wanted to learn more about it, and I went and met with one of the past professors that did it last year with a different group of people that has since graduated from the program. So I met with her. And she was pretty much told me all about it, told me what it was, because I didn't even know what a chemical dependency counselor was. I didn't know like any of those wordings. I just wanted to understand more in depth what it actually was. So I did go meet with someone before, but after that, I knew that it would look good on grad school, look good for a resume, anything like that, which is why I ended up doing it. Going into the classroom, I was a little bit intimidated because you're going into an environment that you're going to be dealing with a lot of things, intense environments. People with addictions is sometimes really hard to deal with because you're going to have to deal with a relapse. You're going to have to deal with the suicides, the overdoses, the families, the friends, everything that comes with it. So it is intimidating and it is a little bit worrisome to know if you're going to be good enough at it. But the program has been so great that I feel confident in being able to deal with whatever addiction and mental health issue comes towards me at this moment. So
what advice do you have for students who are like maybe contemplating entering the addictions counseling certificate program?
I would never, 100% do it. 110% do it. I could not stress that enough, honestly. It, not only have I got the skills and I'm getting the certificate, it'll look good, like he said, win-win situation. But I've also gained so many friendships. I've gained our professor, Joe. He's actually not our professor from our next semester, but he honestly has been such a big impact on all of us. We're all such a close group of friends. So even if you're going into it unsure, I can guarantee you're at least going to be getting those micro skills out of it. You're going to be getting people skills out of it. I've gotten so many friendships out of it, so many people that I feel comfortable just telling all of everything I have. If I have a issue, something to stress about, I always know I could go to those people just because the classroom is a group of people that are wanting to help and we're all there for the same reason and all have the same passion. So it's given me so much more than just like the certificate itself. So if anything, you'll definitely leave with something and it's definitely a positive experience.
So to take a step back, if we were education majors, we would have to do student teaching. If we were nursing majors, there would be clinicals. If we were business majors, we might do an internship. Or if we were engineering majors, they might do a co-op. And in each of these experiences, there'd be kind of a cohort effect where you're in it together with a group of people. And it sounds like whatever your major and whatever university you're at, try to find one of those experiences where you have to do something that's beyond just class and where you're going to go and you're going to have a group of people that you are maybe more in-depth. It's not a big lecture hall. It's small. It's discussion-based. Or whatever your experiential learning is. But it sounds like you really benefited not just from the program, but also from the getting to know the other people in your cohort. And do you think you guys will all graduate at the same time, or is it like different years?
Some of us will be graduating this May. Some of us already have their bachelor's degree, and they're just going through their certificate. So we'll all be graduating from the certificate program about the same time. I'm a junior. One of the girls is a freshman. One girl's a senior. So we're all very age difference. There's a guy in there that has like a whole family, so he is probably around his 30s. We all just have connected, like, there's a lot of diversity, despite our ages, anything. It has all been such, like, a connecting feel, and it's not just, like, a classroom, and it's not just a lecture. It's, like, it actually has, like, they've became almost, like, a family or support system in a way that you don't usually get in a regular classroom.
So what do you think is next for you after graduation?
After graduation, I'm planning on going to grad school for clinical mental health. I would like to continue to practice while going through grad school as the chemical dependency counselor, because you can practice and do that at the same time. So I'm hoping to keep staying in the field of mental health, if not continuing with the addictions with underlying mental health problems as well.
So do you think the connections that you've made in this program so far will help you maybe solidify a job while you're working through grad school?
Yes. So for our practicum, we actually get placed in an agency. They place us somewhere so we don't have to go find it ourselves. So that in itself is getting your foot in the door. Not to mention you're getting that connection with Dr. Osborne, your professors that you have at the time, or even just the people that come in and talk about their views on, like, we had someone come in about multiculturalism. So that was something that we got our foot in the door that we had never heard about before. So it's definitely been a great experience. So,
and it sounds like you're a fan of trying to get a credential or a certificate or something tangible that can go on the resume.
Yes, for sure. Definitely, that was my initial thought, is it will look good for grad school and it'll help me get my foot in the door, but it's also given me the skills before I get to grad school and do start doing those practicing as a counselor. I'll already have my foot in the door and have some experience already doing those things, so I'm not just starting out brand new going into grad school.
Okay, so I just have a real question to ask you. Before all of this, when you were just thinking about it, how stoked were you about working with a population that are suffering from addiction?
So going into it, I was very focused on just mental health. Thinking about addiction, it is a really big epidemic right now, so it was really scary, I'm not going to lie. It's just something you don't know what to expect. A lot of people don't understand the underlying reasons of it, and so it was pretty scary going into it, but now I feel comfortable dealing with anyone that has any type of addiction, any type of anything that they need help with, because that's just the skills that I've learned from the program.
Okay. Anyways, thank you very much, Michaela. I just want to say thank you for coming out and talking with us. I know, again, we had talked to Dr. Osborne about the program. She was so informative because she created it. But I wanted to get a student's perspective. So it was really great that you were able to come out. And hopefully your story inspires other students to join the program, because I think it's going to be a really great opportunity for them moving forward to get kind of placed into the field and to kind of get their feet wet.
Yeah, definitely. I 100% recommend it to anyone that's even thinking about it in the slightest bit. So,
all right. Today with us, we have Day, who actually used to be my president for the peer mentor program here in the psychology department. But today she's coming to us as a recent graduate of our program. So, Day, you graduated in spring of 2019?
Yep. I had a Bachelor of Science in Psychology.
Okay. And so I guess I want to pick your brain a little bit about what's going on with you now that you've graduated with a psychology degree. Are you unemployed, living in your parents' basement? And go.
No, I'm not. My parents don't even have a basement. Okay. So that would suck.
Living in the attic?
No.
Okay.
Nope. I live in Cuyahoga Falls in like a little apartment.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about what you've been doing for work, since you said you're not unemployed, that you're actually gainfully employed. Tell us a little bit about what you've been doing for work since you've graduated in spring.
Okay, so I eventually want to get my PhD, which I think is a good start to that question, but I didn't want to do it quite yet because I want to go to a PhD program that's outside of Ohio, and with like recent stuff that's going on, like I'm going to get married and stuff, we wanted to take some time and just work and save up money and, you know, work on that stuff. So I wanted to look for a job for a while, but I definitely didn't plan on like keeping a job for very long, which was like kind of a weird in between, I think a lot of people don't think about, especially if they're going to take some time off between school. So I started looking a lot into basically like three groups of jobs. And the first one was mainly research. And a lot of it was in hospitals because there didn't seem to be a lot of like academic research jobs. And the second portion was more like also in hospitals, but more like reception-y or like data management for like a psychologist or a clinician. And then the third was just like Burger King's.
Right. Yeah. So you were cognizant going forward that you knew that you wanted to get into a PhD program. So, you know, there's nothing wrong with getting a job schlepping stuff into a burrito, but you were wanting to find something that was a little more relevant that could kind of carry you into a PhD program.
Yeah, because PhD programs, as maybe the listeners know, is about a 5-year stretch. And it's a lot for some people just to go straight into it, especially like graduating at like 20, 21, 22. And I definitely wanted to keep in the field. And if I couldn't keep in the field, I'd probably keep volunteering in research labs. But I was lucky enough to find a job that was both a job and a research lab, so that I don't have to like have a full-time job on top of volunteering, which I would have done if I didn't get this job.
So that's the mythical gap year that we talk about sometimes, or yeah. 2 years or 3 years. And I think that doing research is an outstanding next step to prepare for a doctoral program in almost any field. And so that's really cool. But I'm curious about what have you learned about being a professional through your position that you can't really learn in a classroom during college?
I'll first start with what my job is. So I'm a research technician for a laboratory, and I did not know that a research technician was a job, which I think is kind of funny because I never saw any research technicians in my undergrad. But basically, our lab is made up of postdocs, PhD students, research technicians, and then the undergrads that are volunteers. And the research technicians are kind of like the in-between. There's three of us in my lab right now, and all of us plan on going on to get a different degree. And so we were hired with that in mind. And it's like an interesting position because it's a nice gray area. Like, I'm not a PhD student, but I'm not an undergrad. For professionalism, or what I learned that there's a lot of like smaller jobs that you might not think of when, like, if you haven't seen it in your undergrad, doesn't mean that it doesn't exist.
Sounds like there's a lot that goes into a research lab that people don't see because it's behind the scenes. So you see the papers people write, and maybe you see like having participants in the studies or having animals go through their steps. But in terms of all the stuff behind the scenes, there's just a lot, isn't there?
Yeah, there's a lot of people, and there's a lot of hands moving around, and there's a lot of interconnectivity, which I thought was really cool. Like, you get to see a lot of like, now I'm starting to see like people writing the grants or writing the protocols or working with like the bigger committees that approve these protocols and approve like our experiments. And that's something you don't really see as an undergrad.
Yeah, because science is a team sport. But in the classroom, you're just seeing the end product of all that work. Yeah. And so maybe working as a research assistant or a technician helps you to appreciate all of the different things that go into making scientific knowledge in a lab.
Yeah, I agree with that. Besides the what I didn't learn in a classroom setting is kind of like what it's like to be a full-time researcher. They don't really talk about that because it's so intertwined with, like, you know, the PhD and like getting the schooling. So for me, it's not a 9-to-5 job specifically. Like, your experiment can last like 9-10 hours. So, you know, sometimes you can be here till 6 o'clock at night. Sometimes your experiment lasts 3-4 days. So you have to be cognizant of your own time management, as well as the fact that science isn't a 9-to-5 job, and it's not going to be confined like that, especially when you have animals. Like, I work with animals, and, you know, if they're breeding and they need something on the weekends, like, I personally don't come in on the weekends, but a lot of our postdocs and PhD students, they're here late at night, they're here on the weekends, they're here during holidays. And you don't really see that as an undergrad because you're kind of like protected a little more, and like you have very structured jobs. And that was probably like one of the biggest realizations, is that science is so not confined like an office job.
And speaking of realizations, when did you first realize that you might like to pursue a career in research?
So I started at Kent wanting to do art therapy because I really liked art, and I like therapy and I like working with people. But then through my undergrad here, I started realizing that I was really, really interested in neuroscience. I was taking classes like cognitive neuroscience, clinical neuropsychology, drugs and behavior, biopsych. And anytime the brain sections came up, like, that was the most interesting thing to me. I was reading the book, like reading the chapters ahead of time, and I was finding a lot of passion in that. And I, through like different things throughout the department, I started learning about like neuropsychology and learning that I didn't have to go into clinician work. And as I got older, I also realized that I would not be good in clinician work.
Okay.
Which I think like a lot of people maybe can't admit to themselves, or they don't realize until they're a little older that they're not meant to talk to people all the time.
Okay.
For research specifically, I like learning. I like constantly learning. I like reading. I like gaining information and gaining knowledge. And with research, that's what your entire life is. You're learning and you're developing things that have never been developed before. And it also keeps you close to academia, which is something I really like. I like teaching. I like mentorship, which is why I was president of PMP.
Right.
I like that kind of atmosphere. And the research, especially in like college settings, is like very intertwined, and that's always been appealing to me.
Okay, and let me just clarify, where exactly are you working as a research technician?
So I work for the Kulin and Lehman Laboratories. Our lab is over at ISB, the Integrated Science Building.
What kind of research do you do?
Our lab, so we have two PIs in our lab, and I'm specifically under the layman side, and we do neuroendocrinology, and it's very biomedical science-y because it is over on the science side of campus. And then the other half of our lab does spinal cord injury with neuroscience.
Okay. And so since you've been in this position, do you feel like you've made some new connections within the field?
Yeah, my eventual dream school is in the South, and our PIs and a lot of the PhD students came up from Mississippi, and they really know a lot of people, and they know a lot of research, and even if the people aren't in the same type of research, like, I don't want to work with neuroendocrinology when I'm in my PhD, but there's a lot of, like, overlappingness, and they can tell me like, oh, I know this person that's publishing, and specifically I want to do Alzheimer's research, and they're like, oh yeah, like, you know, we used to work with this person, or I've been at a conference with this person or a symposium with this person. And right now I'm not looking for those connections because I don't plan on like applying for schools for a while, but they are there, and that's really nice.
So what you're talking about is the friend of a friend approach to networking, which is one of the best because it's a warm handoff when you don't have to cold call someone. If Dr. Lehman says, oh, well, I know someone at that university, then when the time comes, he can introduce you, which really helps. And while we're talking about this long road to getting ready for graduate school, what kind of steps did you take to prepare yourself to be ready for work in research in general?
So I started volunteering in research labs at Kent. My sophomore year, I volunteered in the Jazz Now lab here in the psychology department. He works with mice as well. And eventually I moved over into the bio department, and I was volunteering in Dr. Tinkler's lab. Firstly, if you're going to do research, definitely get yourself straight into research as fast as possible. Working with animals has a lot of difficulties that you don't realize until you're in that room at that time. And so there's not a revolving door, but a lot of people come in and they see how things go. And that kind of how I was explaining how, like, you know, an experiment can last 9-10 hours. It's hard work that people might not expect, because when you work with humans, you know, oh, like, this person's going to be here for 2 hours and we're going to work with them for 2 hours and then they leave. But animals aren't like that. So if you want to do research, I definitely suggest getting into an animal lab, even if you don't see yourself working with animals, because if you're reading scientific journals, if you're reading articles, so many of the research articles have animals in them. And I didn't plan on going back to working with animals, but being in Jasnow's lab and seeing how animals are used and like seeing the processes with animals helped me significantly with reading scientific journals, because I could envision what was going on and I could understand what was going on in a totally different manner than before I was interacting with them.
Awesome. So is there any other additional advice that you could give someone that is possibly considering getting into the field of research, maybe for graduate school or just as a full-time gig when they graduate?
Yeah. My biggest suggestion to people is always find what you're passionate about, especially in research. And it's something I've actually just seen recently in my lab. If you're not passionate about what you're researching, like every day you're coming in and you're doing the same things and like developing the same experiments. And if you're not passionate in that, you're not going to be wanting to do that. You're not going to be reading every single paper on it, and you're not going to be pushing yourself like that. And so you shouldn't go into something that you're not passionate and really involved in. So my biggest suggestion to people is to combine what they love. So if you love gender, or you love health, if you love
snake cognition,
snakes, if you love hiking, there's so many like odds and ends things that you can kind of like pull into research, and you can see how it affects people's psychology, GYs, or you can see how it affects them in their brain, or really anything. There's so many things you can combine. You just kind of have to find someone who's researching it already, which can be a little bit of the struggle.
Right, right. Well, I really appreciate you swinging by to talk with us, because I just know, you know, usually I see students and they graduate and I never see them again. So I never hear about what's going on in their world. So I'm really glad that you're close by and we can kind of snag you so we can, you know, have you tell your story in order to maybe motivate some students to maybe branch out and try research, and maybe just consider that it is a possibility to get a job within research with just a bachelor's degree.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that I would definitely suggest is, like, don't limit yourself to boundaries that aren't actually there. So, like, my junior and senior year, I was going over in the bio department because we didn't have that neuroscience major like we do now. And I was talking to professors and I was getting involved in research in a different department that's not over here. It's not in my major, but I didn't let that stop me. And it, like, moved me more into what I was passionate about. So if you feel like maybe you can't find a specific professor in the psychology department that is into exactly what you're into, you should try and find them. Look for research opportunities in the bio, the chemistry departments, and, like, see how far you can get, because that also is really good for connections and getting ahead.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for stopping by, Day. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me.
This was part 2 of 2. Next month, we'll be back with another podcast with a deeper dive into internships and a new segment that we call Is the Juice Worth the Squeeze? We have 6 episodes scheduled for the rest of spring semester 2020, and we plan to start season 2 in August of 2020. Topics for the rest of the spring include things like internships, research experience, informational interviews, taking a gap year, and more. Thank you for joining us for the Psychology Pathways podcast. Remember, we're not acting as an official spokesperson for anyone, and this podcast is not endorsed by any department or university. The views expressed here are ours alone. This podcast is the private social media property of Joel Hughes and Aurora Alexander, and is not a social media platform representing any department or university. We hope you'll join us for the next episode.
If you enjoyed the show, rate us at iTunes or Spotify and tell your friends.
Find out more at psychpathways.com. That's P-S-Y-C-H pathways.com.
And send your listener questions to psychologypathwayspodcast@gmail.com.